This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Gantley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Yeah, great to be with you.
And boy, I tell you, we don't want to push the Christmas season any more than the next guy, but I'll bet you that a certain percentage of our listeners have already begun their Christmas shopping.
Yep.
And if that's you, or if you haven't yet, but plan on doing any of it online and plan on using Amazon, if you go to Amazon.smile or smile.amazon, either way around, you can register Catholic Radio Indy as your charity. And be sure to use all three words, Catholic Radio Indy, as your charity. And then every time you shop at Amazon, Catholic Radio gets a small percentage of what you buy. And you never have to think about it again. You don't have to do anything special every time after that. If you're using Amazon, it automatically, small percentage of it comes our way. So the simplest way to start that is by going to our website, Catholic Radio Indy, I-N-D-Y, CatholicRadioIndy.org, and click on the Amazon Smile logo. You'll find it over on the right-hand side, probably about halfway down the page there. Click on it. You'll register one time and choose Catholic Radio Indy as your charity, and that's it. You're done. You don't have to think about it again. Every time you buy anything, Catholic Radio gets a small percentage. So if you can help us out that way, it does add up if everybody does it.
And I thought I'd mention, if you are on social media and you are a Facebook user, Catholic Radio Indy does have a Facebook page, and we do push out not only events, but interesting articles, things that are going on at Catholic Radio, and we also push out our podcast. So that's just another way that you can stay in touch with us at Catholic Radio. And we have about 750 people that follow us there, and you could be 751 if you'd like to do that. So just go to Facebook and then just search Catholic Radio Indy, and when it comes up, it'll be the official Catholic Radio Indy page, and just like us there, and you can be a part of our family there. And today we are going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, which is church history. It's an area that I always feel somewhat weak in. Our guest today is Sandra Measle. She is a church historian, an author of The Da Vinci Hoax, and also a speaker. She lives in the Carmel area. She's a parishioner at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And we are going to be talking about church history, but this time, instead of talking about maybe the negative things that have happened or that the church has done, or maybe done or not done over time, we're going to be talking about the major contributions that the Catholic Church has made to society. So here to share our knowledge with us on church history is Sandra Measle. Welcome to Faith in Action, Sandra.
Thank you for having me.
It's always great to have you because, you know, people don't really know their history, and as younger generations come up, it seems like it's getting more and more watered down. But I want to ask you, you know,
all you have to do is watch the History Channel and they tell you everything you want to know.
And even the History Channel's gotten pretty bogus,
and
you know.
A lot of it goes back to ancient aliens or something.
Yes, it's crazy. But I want to ask you, Sandra, why is history important? And just start there. What is history and why is it important?
History is the record of human experience through time, and nothing human should be alien to us. We should know who we are and where we came from, and this is what historians try to do. Now, no one can write perfect history with the best will in the world. We cannot fulfill the ancient ideal of presenting history as it was, as it really was, because you cannot completely know the past. May not be records. You cannot overcome your particular viewpoint, your psychology, your biases. You can try. You can be aware of them, and you can be aware of the biases of historians that you read. But there is no one perfect history, and I don't think there ever can be. What happens in history, and they say, well, why the past doesn't change, so why do you write new history books? Because the way of looking at the past does change. There was a time when nobody wrote about everyday life in the past. Nobody wrote about the experiences of women. Nobody wrote about the experiences of marginalized people. I hate that phrase, but we have to use it in this case. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at new kinds of data that come up, or nobody thought of looking at the price of grain as an index of poverty in early modern Europe, and now they get quantitative because we have computers to run through thousands and thousands of records, which were not possible before. And at the same time, I fear, and my last experience with academic history ended in 1990 at Indiana University, that the history profession is being badly corrupted by all the modern obsessions with race and sex and gender and politics, and even the way it's going to be taught in grade schools is going to be corrupt. So
how does it corrupt it? Talk about that exactly, because it
well the negative attitude towards Western civilization. Western civilization is responsible for all the ills in the world. But at the same time, they aren't studying the history of China or Japan in any depth to really understand those cultures. It's a matter of hating, self-hating by elite intellectuals, and they're deconstructing what we can learn about the past, making it about their little present-day political obsessions, and we used to call that present-mindedness.
Presentism? Is that
yes,
the same?
Yes, presentism, yes. That you're looking at the past with modern glasses, and you're not seeing, you should try and see it the way the people of the time saw it, which works very well in history of everyday life, where you have enough artifacts to look at. That keeps you straight. But my Lord, I don't think I would want to study history in an academic setting today. And two of my children were history majors and got master's degrees, and they do not work in the history industry, so to speak. But what people don't realize that linear history is essentially a biblical innovation in the world of thought, that most ancient cultures thought of the world as either static or undergoing an eternal return, that it goes through cycles of creation and destruction, and it's just going to keep rolling around and around.
Circularly,
yes.
Okay.
Yes, Mircea Eliade, the mythology scholar, wrote a book called The Eternal Return about how common this idea is. But the Bible happens in time. The world is created. The world exists, develops, salvation history unfolds from the call of Abraham, the sin of Adam, but the call of Abraham, and down and down and down to Jesus. And Jesus is absolutely a historical figure, existing in a real time and place. He's not like Dionysus or Osiris or one of those ancient gods who is just in a timeless condition.
So would you say then that one of the major contributions that the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. I guess, presented or God mm-hmm. gave us is this whole notion of linear
yes.
history?
Yes, that God gave it, and the Church Fathers were quite interested in that, particularly St. Augustine. He writes about time and eternity and what is time and what is history, and they tried to visualize the periods of God's interaction with the human race. So history is right in the bones of the church, so to speak. And the church has a history, and every little thing in the church has a history. The mass has a history. Your typical representations in art, such a basic thing as a crucifix on the wall that I'm looking at, that has a history. And It doesn't jump from the apostles to your modern parish. It doesn't jump, and the Protestants are particularly into this.
Mm-hmm,
it doesn't
yeah.
jump from the apostles to your little non-denominational chapel either.
Yeah.
And even though the canon of the Mass has prayers that go back to ancient times, the Mass still developed, and devotions developed, and the way we look at things developed. And this is all worth studying. And Christianity was absolutely a new thing in the ancient world, a very radical thing in the ancient world.
We're talking with Sandra Meisel. She is a church historian, author of The Da Vinci Hoax, and speaker. And we are talking about contributions that the Catholic Church has made throughout history. I do want to ask you about the book that you authored, The Da Vinci Hoax, which I think was kind of a response to the popular fictional book, The Da Vinci Code.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And Sandra can sum up the book in one sentence.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Would you like to sum up Dan Brown's great opus? Paris is in France, London is in England, and Leonardo da Vinci painted pictures. Those are the only accurate facts in his book.
And okay, so it's fiction, but you know, there is one thing that is really kind of a phenomenon that we talked about before we got started here, and that I've been very much observing and kind of guilty of myself, is that we learn our history from pop culture and, you know, the History Channel or HBO or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's really not the way to learn history.
No.
Because half of it's all fake, right?
Well, there are degrees of fakery. Now, okay. If you go back to the beginnings of PBS and Masterpiece Theater, they had a wonderful series, The Six Wives of Henry VIII and Elizabeth R. Mm-hmm. Those are 40, 50 years ago. And they are pretty decent representations of what happened.
Okay.
Then you go fast forward to the dramatization of Hilary Mantel's book about Cromwell, Bring Out the Bodies. What is it? Yeah, Bring Down the Bodies.
Okay.
Anyway, it's terribly distorted. It is a slander on Thomas More, and it makes Cromwell out to be this heroine. This heroic figure. We've had HBO series on Mary, Queen of Scots that is utterly ridiculous. Even the costumes are bad. The Cate Blanchett movies about Elizabeth are very anti-Catholic, whereas the old PBS series was not. And tastes change. And not only do the people who make these movies not necessarily know about history, they don't really care because they have a viewpoint and they want to push that down your throat.
So it is interesting that, and we are going to be talking about contributions, but what's really interesting is that it seems like a lot of the popular things are very anti-Catholic.
Yes.
And to the point that, I mean, they're not even accurate. I mean,
no.
You know what I'm saying? So let's talk about, you know what? Let's just take a quick break right here. This will be good. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the contribution the Catholic Church has made for all of us. Stay tuned. Yeah.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley's in the studio with me, as well as our guest, Sandra Meisel. She is a church historian, author of The Da Vinci Hoax, and a speaker. And we're talking about contributions that the Catholic Church has made to society. And I want to start with the with marriage and family. Mm-hmm. How did the church contribute here?
Well, the church makes a radical change with a radical break with the Greco-Roman ideas about marriage and the family. That Romans were generally monogamous in the time of Christ and afterwards, but they had very easy divorce. Husbands could kill their wives if they were adulterous, but husbands could have as many mistresses as they wanted, both male and female. And when you say, in the words of Jesus, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder, that's very much a hard saying. It's even the Jews who were monogamous and faithful at the time of Christ still had easy divorce. Well, now you don't have divorce, you have one wife, and therefore the family unit is the same for all classes of society. The rich men cannot monopolize extra women, whether as concubines or extra wives or what have you, so everybody's on the same footing. The church also said that slaves could marry, said that slaves and free people could marry, which was not allowed under Roman law, but the church permitted it within its own community. The Roman father had absolute life and death power over his family. When a child was born, it was laid on the ground in front of the father, and if he picked it up, it was to live, and if he said, take it away, it died. They exposed children regularly. Even wealthy people would just drop the children off in a handy spot in the marketplace. In ancient Athens, there was a hill where children would be placed in large jars and placed on this hill, and anybody who came by could pick them up and take them home to adopt, or more likely, to raise as slaves or to raise as future prostitutes. And the church is still railing against this in the violent rhetoric of St. John Chrysostom about, if you expose your daughter now, someday you may meet her in a brothel. And would you like to do that? Why, certainly not, gentlemen. Their whole attitude about human life is different than the prevailing ideas of Greece and Rome.
Talk about that.
Yes. We don't really appreciate how cruel the ancient world was. It isn't just that they had gladiator shows and violent entertainment and things like that, but Romans had no sympathy for anyone who was not a free Roman citizen. Slaves were called, in law, furniture that talks.
Wow. That's pretty bad.
And they had contempt for slaves because anybody who was captured and in danger of being enslaved should have killed themselves. And if they didn't kill themselves, then they're an inferior creature. And then there are barbarians, and then there are those other groups like those weird Jews and so forth and so forth. They would never have cared for the poor. They would never have, as Christians did, establish hospitals. The secular historian Philip Jenkins points out that an inducement to convert to Christianity was observing that in a time of plague, Christians didn't flee, but they stayed behind and they took care of the sick. And this is not something a Roman would do. We don't realize how utterly poor the poor of ancient times were. They were like the worst street people with no possessions. They're just lying in a little huddle of rags in the corner of the temple yard or something like that. And Christians said we should help them, we should give them money, and the church will supervise the giving of alms. And it's good to give alms, and John Chrysostom had some very harsh things to say about people who kept all their money and their goods for themselves. You know, he was a sharp-tongued guy, not just a golden-tongued guy.
So the dignity of the human person,
yes,
had many, many, I guess, positive effects.
Yes,
still does.
They may take a long time to mature. Now, St. Paul's letter to Philemon, he is not ordering Philemon to free his slave, but he says, your slave is now a brother in Christ. A Roman could never have said that. The pagans might have some very high-minded philosophers, but philosophers did not dirty their hands thinking about slaves. And yet, only in Christianity has a critique of slavery and anti-slavery movements arisen. It doesn't arise in any other culture.
Now we actually do have a little bit more time, so I want to move on to the dignity of labor.
Yes.
That's another contribution.
Yes.
Talk about that. What does that mean exactly?
Well, a civilized Roman or Greek, or person who had was Greek by culture, the ideal was not to have to work. You have leisure to be a philosopher. And even though philosophers might live very simply, very ostentatiously simply, they were not about to work. That was for slaves. We speak of servile labor. Well, mm-hmm. all labor was servile. But Christianity has Christ worked with his hands. St. Joseph worked with his hands. The apostles worked with their hands. And St. Paul, who was of a higher social class than the other ones, was still working with his hands at his trade when he's out evangelizing, because he doesn't want to be dependent on expecting support from other people. He's capable of earning his own way. And the early monastic ideal, St. Benedict's motto is, ora et labora, work, pray and work. The monks are expected to earn their own keep. Even the desert fathers, who are these crusty old guys in the deserts of Egypt, are earning their keep by weaving baskets and mats, which they trade for food. This is incomprehensible in the ancient world, that it's good to be a worker and do honest work for your pay. And you have saints come from any class. Saints have done all kinds of work. And of course, in the Middle Ages, you had the guild system and things like that. But they were humanizing the underclasses, at least in theory, from the beginning.
Now, Senator, you mentioned supporting the poor or taking care
yes.
of the poor as being a Christian philosophy.
Yes.
And in this modern day and age, it seems like it's more of a government thing than Christian. The government takes care of the poor. The government feeds the hungry. And what is the contrast there of the two different ways of taking care of that need?
Well, in the Bible, we are doing these good deeds to the needy for the sake of Jesus. You're supposed to see Christ in the needy, Mother Teresa being a great modern example of that. But the government, this is a subject, not even necessarily a citizen in practice, that we're doing good for you because we are so much better and better put together than you, and you will take care of you little people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when the government gives out the charity, the government calls the tune.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And I can't, we have about 4 minutes left, but I guess when I think about contributions to society, I guess, I look at science. Like, what mm-hmm. about the goodness of matter? Talk about that.
That, again, is an unusual idea. And the Jews, because the old, you know, Genesis starts and God saw creation and called it good, the Jews believed in the goodness of matter. Their idea of the human person is a body-soul together, not a soul merely inhabiting the shell of a body. And if the material world is good and not an illusion, as Eastern religions often have, in Hinduism and Buddhism, we don't really exist, we are just illusions fluttering around, and we have to break the illusion and get out of here.
But we're a simulation, right?
yes. And when
but Christianity had a different view of that.
Christianity has a different view of that. God made the world. The world is good. It is good for man to study and master the world. It is good for him to tend the garden. And although the church is often depicted as being anti-science, it was actually too encumbered by the mistakes of ancient science. This is really true in the Middle Ages. They keep copying these old books, and they're talking about the four humors that control the human body and mistaken ideas. But at the same time, the Middle Ages was a time of great technological progress, things that the Romans didn't do or even couldn't do. A Roman architect could not have built a Gothic cathedral. A Roman did not use a windmill or a watermill, and they're everywhere in the Middle Ages. They're doing all kinds of repetitive work. Agricultural technology improves greatly. The ability to work very precisely with metals makes printing possible. The Middle Ages invents glasses, eyeglasses, rather important to me, since I'm wearing glasses here.
So how is that connected to the church?
That the church thought this was all good. This is not something that is done,
outside of God,
yes, or defiant of God, or anything like that. And of course, you have had Christian Catholics in sciences from the beginning. You know, talk about Mendel and Pasteur, and Georges Lemaître. And when I was at the University of Illinois, one of the distinguished chemists was Theodore Brown, who's a very devout Catholic and wrote a book about his life in science.
So we only have about 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. What, for those wanting to learn about church history, do you have any recommendations or how to go about that?
I don't know of any modern survey history, but a lot of people can learn from media, these Jeff Cavin's videos on church history are mm-hmm. good. But go out and see what's there. Reformation history, for instance, is doing some marvelous work, and it's not biased. The Catholic, Protestant, and non-believer authors are all being fair-minded. Not true, you know, 50 or 100 years ago. When it was all pro-Protestant.
And that makes a big difference if you're, you know, the bias that someone has.
Yes.
We are going to be having you back here in a little bit to talk about an upcoming not-so-good mm-hmm. HBO series that's going to basically probably trash the church and probably be really inaccurate. And that's just a tease for another show coming up.
Yes.
But, Sandra, people can... find your book somewhere, right?
Yes. The Da Vinci Hoax is out of print, but it's they had so many copies printed, you can certainly find it used for probably 10 cents. And I was invited to write it. I didn't know anything about this book. It came in the mail. The editor said, write me an article about it, and the rest is history, as we say.
Well, Sandra Meza, you're always an interesting guest. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll catch you soon to talk about some more interesting topics.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again or any past episode at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.